Good Monday, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everyone is doing well. Day number, 75 of quarantine. I'm losing count.
Chase 77. McCabe.
77. There you go. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson back with us. Ryan, what's up, my man? How are you?
What's up, Chaser? How was your weekend?
It was good. I have walked around all morning saying, and from North Carolina, a 6'6 guard. I have been fired up all freaking day and night since The Last Dance premiered. I thought it was well done. I hate that I have to wait a week for episodes 3 and 4, but I thought it was awesome.
That's part of the beauty of it. You don't unload all 10 hours of it at once.
No, you don't. You don't. And I think they're doing this right, especially with everything going on right now, because here's the deal. And I saw a few people on Twitter saying, like, I hate that they're, you know, why don't they just put it out all at once? Well, you have the draft this week, so that's going to take care of this week. There could be some news, you know, that's coming out, of course, when it comes to sports coming back. So you have that, and then you have something to look forward to next Sunday. So I think it's totally fine.
Yeah, and, you know, ESPN needs the content on Sunday nights, and they can hype
this up. They moved it up.
Right. Well, and they can hype this up for all 5 weeks. They surely did that leading into episodes 1 and 2. And I tempered my expectations a little bit because I didn't know 100% what to expect with this exclusive footage that they were talking about. You know, I thought, is 10 parts way too much? But in reality, it's essentially the 5-part series of the OJ made in America, because those episodes are 2 hours long, and I think all 10 of these are 1 hour long. So I thought it was incredibly well done. I cannot wait for episodes 3 and 4. It was so well done. You know, we were both young, Chase, when the Bulls were the biggest thing in sports, and Michael Jordan was the biggest thing in sports. So to see it through the lens of where we are now in our lives was certainly very interesting.
Yeah, first jersey that I ever owned, the black Bulls number 23 Jordan. I got that when I was probably 6 or 7.
Okay.
I mean, see, and I'm like, I guess I'm what, a year and a half, 2 years older than you. So we're right there in, you know, the same age. But I remember those teams. Like, I watched those teams.
Sure.
You know, so I remember the dynasty that was, no, obviously not the first three-peat, but mainly the second three-peat. But I, you know, those teams in my mind were the best.
Right. But I'm sure you didn't either remember or realize a lot of the details that were going on with that 97-98 season that were heavily detailed last night.
Jerry Krause, man. See, I think it's sad that he's not here to defend himself, because I think that he would have, you know, he passed away, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago. If he had been in the documentary, you probably would have been able to get, you would have gotten both sides of the story, obviously. But, you know, and they did, I thought they were respectful with how they depicted him, but then showing some of the old footage of Jordan and Pippen and the little snipes that they would take and how they would just make fun of him. That was really telling of just how fractured the relationship had gotten. And, you know, I thought Phil Jackson was respectful in some of the things that he said, but you could tell that they had been together for a long time, and Jerry Krause as the GM had to look at it as, all right, how long can I really sustain this? At what point do I have to blow it up and start to rebuild? And, you know, I'm curious to hear what Floyd says about it later today, because I'm reminded of the Titans, you know, when the day that we always talk about where he cut D-Mace and Samari Roll and Kevin Carter and Joe Nedney, of just how difficult of a decision that was because of the salary cap. But you knew at some point you were going to have to do something like that. And I think Jerry Krause looked at it the same way.
Well, I'm really curious to see what else unfolds in this documentary of some of the angst that Michael Jordan was feeling towards Jerry Krause, because, you know, he had the foot injury, and like they said last night, he was held to a 14-minute, you know, time cap.
Yeah.
And he couldn't go 1 second over. And the fact that they pulled him out of that Pacers game at the end with 30 seconds left, because he had reached his 14 minutes, that he that was part of the reason why he has some ill will towards Jerry Krause, and felt that in 97-98 going into that last season, when it was very evident that that was going to be the last dance of the Bulls dynasty. I'm really curious to see if there's anything else that pops up over that decade, because surely the ill will that he felt towards Jerry Krause, or even Scottie Pippen felt towards Jerry Krause, can't all be from that one instance with the foot injury.
No, I think it's built over time. Now, again, this goes back to, I wish Jerry Krause was here to defend himself, but how one way he was depicted was he didn't like that he didn't get the credit. And he deserves a ton of the credit because he's the architect. He's the one that drafted and signed all these players and put them together. And look, you know, I didn't realize that Scottie Pippen was so underpaid, but if he doesn't have that contract, then they don't get some of the players that they got.
Well,
I mean, you know, that's one way to look at it.
The other thing is, as much credit as he deserves for crafting that Bulls dynasty, he deserves as much of the blame as well for bringing it to an end in 98.
Sure. I don't blame him at all. Personally, I thank Jerry. Jerry did a great deed.
We know why you think Jerry.
Yeah, Jerry did a great deed. He ended up saying, you know what? Phil Jackson, you're out of here, man. Get out. And guess where Phil Jackson went next? The Los Angeles Lakers. And what did he do the following season? Won a championship with the Los Angeles Lakers. And then what did Jerry do the next 10 years of Chicago Bull history? Draft pick after draft pick. Not working out.
Nothing.
Nothing. Now, he did his first year after, this is 99 draft, he did get Elton Brand with the first pick, and then he got Ron Artest later in the draft. But then years after year, it just got bad. At one point, the Bulls drafted like LaMarcus Aldridge and traded him to the Blazers. Like and then they traded for Tyson Chandler one draft, and then they drafted another center like the following pick right after that.
I wonder if in 40 or 50 years, if the Chicago Bulls still haven't made an NBA Finals, if they start calling it the curse of the curse of Jerry Krause, or the curse of the Last Dance, or whatever.
The Krause curse.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, but okay. I am gonna
also
say this.
if you're Jerry Reinsdorf and you're the owner of the Bulls, how could you let that happen and almost just roll with Jerry Krause instead of the best dynasty in sports, and one of the best dynasties in sports history?
Because he won six titles.
So what? Why not? They could have won a seventh. They could have won an eighth.
But okay. But at some point, like, I get both sides. Like, yeah, you want to see how many you can win. Fine. All right. That's the competitor. That's fantastic. But at the same time, it is a business. And Reinsdorf, I mean, it's his money. So he knows that Pippen was going to break the bank. Jordan was going to continue to break the bank. You know, you got to pay Rodman. You got other players that are going to be a part of this. So I get that part, but at the same time, all the Bulls fans, and I get it, they haven't done anything since then, but you still got six titles out of it.
Sure, but
I mean, it was a hell of a dynasty.
You don't see the Warriors tearing it down just because they got a few championships.
No, they just got everybody hurt.
Well, that's true. but you see my point of, like, why not see it until the very end and not just, you know.
But how do you know that wasn't the very end?
Well, it could have been, but why not go for number seven and win seven championships in 9 years, or 8 and 10?
Like, maybe so. I mean, like, one thing.
Why do you go into that season if you're Jerry Krause and you're Jerry Reinsdorf saying, this is it? This is it.
That was a mistake.
We're just going to bring back Phil Jackson on a 1 year contract. We're going to have Tim Floyd here sitting in the first row behind the bench, walking in Phil Jackson's shadow for the last 2 years of Phil Jackson being in Chicago. So we're going to do that. And we're going to bring this whole thing to a screeching halt.
Because Jerry wanted the credit and Jerry didn't get it. I thought it was, you know, they said he had the little man syndrome, which was true. I mean, he did. I mean, he hated the fact that he was the one that built it, yet he didn't get any of the glory. It was always Phil. It was always MJ.
If you're Jerry Krause, who cares?
And I'm not defending him, Ryan. I'm just saying that's why. That's why he did it. And Reinsdorf let him do it. So that's the that that's the way it is. And Tim Floyd came in there, and we know what happened.
You talk about filling in for Phil Jackson, though. When you look at this roster from the 1999 team, it was pretty bad. Ron Artest, Elton Brand, obviously was on that team. Will Perdue was on that team as well. Fred Horsberg was on that team, who coaches the Bulls at one point. And then John Starks ended up going to the Bulls that year, too. So
wait, was Will – because I knew Will was there, but was he there – A part of the second three-peat, and then
Will
was there at the first one.
Will at the time he played back for the Spurs, if I'm not mistaken, for
That's
a couple
right.
years.
He was there at the beginning, or towards
yeah, he
the
was there like towards the beginning,
95.
And then he left in like I want to say 95, and he played two seasons with the Spurs. I want to say,
yep.
And then
yep.
he came back to the Bulls after everybody left. So
he played four seasons with the Spurs.
Yeah.
Because he won a title with them.
Oh, yeah, he did play four. And then he ended up going back to Chicago and then going to Portland.
Yeah,
so
he would be announced as the man in the middle, just so you know.
Cool.
Nothing? Okay. Nothing. Let's go to Jeff, 615-737-1025. Jeff wants to weigh in on the Chicago Bulls. Jeff, what's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, I haven't gone to see a lot of NBA games in person, but I was able to go to Atlanta to see them when they had Rodman, and Michael Jordan, probably no one can match his aura in regards to a professional athlete. I mean, during warm-ups, whenever he touched the ball, the entire arena exploded with cheers. And, Pippen went off that night. It wasn't Jordan's night. But, I mean, to see them live and to see the reaction with seeing Michael Jordan play live, I mean, he transcended sports. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Jeff. Thanks. And look, I never got to see him play live. I don't know about you, Ryan. I would assume not. But he's one of those guys that will always go down as the workhorse. And, you know, you can't tell him that he can't do anything. He's going to prove that he can. But one thing that I thought the second episode of The Last Dance did a very good job of, and this was something that I always believed, but they did a good job of illustrating it, that he needed Pippen. He needed Scottie Pippen to really make this whole thing work. And, you know, Pippen being number two, whatever you want to call him, he was great in his own right. And I think those two together really made this thing work.
Well, I bet in episode 3 and/or 4 we learn how Scottie Pippen went from demanding a trade to coming back with the Bulls.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm very curious to see how that all played out, to see if MJ had a conversation with Pippen about, you know, having, quote, one last dance. But, you know, I also thought Scottie Pippen kind of acted like a teenager, I should say, back in the summer of 97 when he was like, I'm not going to let a foot or a surgery ruin my summer. I'm just going to take my time, have my summer, and then I'm going to get back at the Bulls and have my surgery right before the season.
Yeah, I agree. He didn't handle it right.
No.
And he admitted that he didn't handle it right. But, I mean, he felt slighted. Now, at the same time, dude, you signed the contract. So, like, I mean, you're the one that signed that deal. So, I mean, you kind of have to – and he explained that, too. I thought they did a good job of that. He was like, I needed to do what was best for my family. And, you know, hindsight being 2020, I wish I hadn't signed such a long-term deal. And
Think of the differences in sports finances over time. Scottie Pippen signed a 7-year, $18 million contract, and then Colton Sissons for the Preds essentially signed the same deal.
Right.
20 years later.
So The Last Dance, the first two episodes, fantastic. If you missed it last night, I'm sure it's on the ESPN app. You can catch up. And then episodes 3 and 4, Dennis Rodman going to be featured a little bit more. In
episode 3 and 4 is going to probably end up being my favorite. It's Dennis Rodman and the Bad Boys combined.
Michael Wilbon today on Golic and Wingo said some of the Rodman stuff is unbelievable.
Well,
that comes out in this.
Look, you're going to laugh, but I know Marquise agrees with me, and our friend Ricky does too. I'm curious to see how much they show of Rodman going to wrestling, because that was during all this that he was leaving practice to go do Monday Nitro because he was featured in a match with Hulk Hogan and the NWO, and that was like a big controversy because he was leaving basketball and spending time away from basketball doing the wrestling stuff. So I'm curious to see how much they they include that in this, because that led to a lot of the tension. So,
well, one of the stories that Michael Wilbon told this morning on Go Look and We Go is that there is a road trip that the Bulls were about to go on, and Rodman went to Phil Jackson and wanted to see if he could go to New York by himself and do something before they went on the road trip. And Michael Jordan was ticked off by that, and we are going to see that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I can't wait for that. But when we come back, Ryan, they're a dynasty, obviously. But there are some dynasties that we missed that we wish that we had gotten to see. I'm curious of what everybody thinks on that. We will discuss that. If you want to weigh in, 615-737-1025, you can call or text. Dynasties that you missed. We will discuss that next. ESPN 1025 The Game. Soak it in, man. Greatest intro ever. Welcome back into the Rundown. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. I'm not going to do it. Dynasties that you missed. I want to.
You so want to.
Just do it, man.
That was so great.
If I pot it down, it's over. So if you want to do it,
I'm not going to do it. I'm going to remain somewhat professional. As Sirius by the Alan Parsons Project plays the intro to the Bulls. I loved how they ended the first episode with that, though. I thought that was perfect. They do the ring ceremony, and then that takes you to the next episode. So that was pretty cool. Because I was sitting there the whole time going, when are they going to show the intro? When are they going to show the intro?
Well, the Chicago Bulls put out a tweet this weekend with a flashback intro video with that music and them introducing the starting lineup, and every single time you hear that music, you get goosebumps.
Yeah, it's like, and now it was. Let's see that lineup, because I saw that tweet. It was obviously Jordan, Pippen, Rodman, Luke Longley, and is it Kerr? Was Kerr the other one? I don't remember, but so iconic back in the day with those Bulls teams.
Was it Harper?
Yeah. Harper. That's it.
Yeah. Did you say Tony Kukoc?
No, but
Tony Kukoc.
Was he the other one that was starting? I love too that Jordan was yelling at Tony Kukoc. I'm like, don't yell at Tony Kukoc.
Well, I'm telling you, there may be a scene on this that him and Steve Kerr get into some little heated little argument at practice. Hopefully they show it, but I doubt it. Got a little heated.
It got very heated.
Very heated. So I'm just not going to spoil it for you, but you got to watch it. Hopefully they show it, because it did happen.
So dynasties that you may have missed. Now, Ryan, you're going to go ahead and say the Big Red Machine, so we'll go ahead and just
move
on.
How did you know I was going to go that direction?
Oh, Kane.
I just figured.
Oh, I didn't know you were a wrestling fan, right? Good deal. Yeah, his debut was amazing, wasn't it?
It was. That's got to be Kane. Yeah, that's what Ryan was thinking. Okay. So in all seriousness. In all seriousness, what are you going with?
The Big Red Machine.
Okay, I figured. Yeah.
I mean, look, Johnny Bench, Pete Rose, Joe Morgan, Tony Perez, George Foster. I mean, the Big Red Machine, I really wish I would have been alive to see all that, probably because that's really the only time in the last 50 years that the Reds have won anything. So when they won the World Series in 75 and 76 against the Red Sox and the Yankees, outside of that, I would have loved to live through the Edmonton Oilers of the 1980s with Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messier, and Yari Curry.
Yeah, that would have been good. That would have been very, I mean, that they were one of the best teams, if not the best team ever. And in hockey, I think, has had different dynasties and different eras, but that's one for sure. Now, Marquise is going to appreciate mine, and I bring this up because my dad was a huge Lakers fan back in the 80s and, has told me stories about he and my mom on their honeymoon going to St. Croix. And they basically, along their travels, they would stop and they would be able to watch the finals, in the 1986 finals. And there was a little tiki bar on the island of St. Croix. They were the only bar that had a TV, and that's where my dad would go and watch the NBA finals. And so the Showtime Lakers for me with Pat Riley and Magic, of course, Kareem, that would be the one that I wish I could witness, just because it meant so much to my dad.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of where I would have went too. You can probably start right there at 1980, where they won that championship with Paul Westhead, And then the Pat Riley era began after that. So, yeah, you can probably do that. That was what I was going to go with, because the Lakers, they pretty much ran the 80s. They went to 7 NBA finals. They won 4 of them. So, yeah, that's probably where I was going to go.
What about way back when with Murderers Row with the Yankees?
Yeah, I would have that on the list. That would be fantastic to see that. I mean, because you haven't had a lineup like that, you know, since. I mean, you've had good lineups, but, you know, nothing with that type of notoriety. So I would agree with that. What are some football, you know, from the 85 Bears, even though it was 1 year, I mean, does that count?
I don't think that counts, because that's not really a dynasty. That was one of the best teams ever, for sure. But I don't think I would include them in the likes of what the Cowboys did in the 70s or what the Packers
did. That'd be one for me.
Yeah, what the Packers did in the 60s, the Steelers in the 70s. I would probably say the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Steel Curtain.
Yep.
With Terry Bradshaw, Franco Harris, Lynn Swann, and, you know, Jack Lambert. You know, that defense, that collection of characters with the Steelers in the 70s, I would probably answer it that way.
See, I was going to go Oakland Raiders / LA because they won 2 championships in the 80s. But if I was just going to be funny, I'll just go back to the Bills and then just watch them lose every Super Bowl they've been in. So that would be a good dynasty to watch.
I mean, the Bills, though, that was a pretty impressive
It was. Run. I mean, Jim Kelly's, you know, he's an amazing quarterback, but it was just funny to watch them lose every year, and it's kind of sad. I wanted to just hear the talking points of, like, sports radio or just TV of talking about that Bills team and every year that they went to the Super Bowl and every year that they lost.
You know what's an interesting discussion is what teams didn't become a dynasty that almost did. And I think that Buffalo Bills run in the 90s, that's as close as you can ever come to being a dynasty without even being mentioned as a dynasty.
Yeah, because I guess the argument is, don't you have to win championships to be considered a dynasty?
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, but they had quite the run, you know, back then. My dad, so funny story for you guys, my dad had a bar back in the day in Bellevue, and for whatever reason, the Buffalo Bills Club of Nashville used his bar is kind of their hangout. And so obviously for 4 straight years, it was good for him to have that, because they would, you know, all show up and, you know, have a good time and drink, and then they'd lose and then they'd drink more. So, you know, it was good for business to have that. But I always thought it was funny. Like, why is there a Buffalo Bills chapter in Nashville that, you know, doesn't really make a lot of sense, but I would agree on that one. What are some other football ones that come to mind? College football, I guess.
College football. Bama? I mean, the Miami Hurricanes had probably 2 different stints, late 80s and then with Butch Davis and Larry Coker at the turn of the century.
Yeah.
What'd you say, Marquise?
I would go back to the U and the Howard Snellenberger days. Like,
yes,
I would go back to that for sure.
Yeah.
And because we already experienced the other one, and that one was absolutely amazing too. So, but I'd probably go back in that Alabama. I'd probably go back for a couple of Paul Bryant championships. You know, wouldn't mind, you know, taking it back. But that's Notre Dame. Maybe is another one that had a good run for a while. Penn
UCLA.
State only got a couple. So,
basketball, UCLA basketball.
Notre Dame, Penn State, and Alabama. Those are kind of like the 3 main dynasties of, like, back then in college football.
I'll put this one because I mean, I was around, but I was very, very young. I remember the end of it, but the Braves of the 90s. I mean, they only have 1 championship to show for it, but that was a pretty dominant
Is that a
team.
Dynasty, though?
I think it's a dynasty.
That's a could-have-been dynasty.
Nah, dude. I'm trying.
You're not a dynasty if you only win 1 championship.
But they were there, though. They got there.
I don't
there.
Care. I don't care. You can be. The Bills were there 4 straight years and they didn't win one.
They didn't win one, but the Braves at least won one.
They won only one. You can't be a dynasty and only win 1 championship.
And I'm trying to put my bias aside, but I disagree.
No,
with
your
you.
Bias is 100% fully in that. The
Braves,
the 90s Braves, are not a dynasty. They are a could have been dynasty.
Marquise, your thoughts.
This is a tough one because I wanted to put my Dodgers in the 80s in there, but they didn't only won 1 championship.
Or the Dodgers from the 2010s.
But, okay, but they're like either of those teams that we're talking about, they get they're there. They
so,
are
that's
they
not
are
a
there
dynasty.
Year after year.
You win you are a dynasty when you win multiple championships.
I mean,
you are not a dynasty with then if you're gonna count the 90s Atlanta Braves as a dynasty, then you're counting all sorts of teams as dynasties. Like there's a difference between a great run and a dynasty.
Oh, okay, I will say this. So five World Series included it, the Braves were included in that, and they only won one championship. Now we consider the Golden State Warriors a dynasty, and that's because they won three out of those, you know, NBA finals that they went to. If the Braves would have won maybe one more out of that five, I would probably say they were a dynasty.
I'm going to respectfully disagree. I still think getting
I think
there
one
and winning
you are not
the
a
National
dynasty
League.
I
think one
if
more
you
would have
get to the championship.
You're a
you
dynasty
have to
in the
win.
National League.
You have to. No. Don't.
What'd your Reds do in the 90s
no,
besides
no, don't
one
give
World
me that.
Title?
Yeah, the Reds have as many World Series championships in the 1990s as the Atlanta Braves. And I'm not sitting here telling you that the 1990 Cincinnati Reds are a dynasty. They were a great team.
I mean, they were featured in it's tricky because they're featured in four of the five World Series, and then they won one. If they would have won just one more, they would have been, without a doubt, a dynasty. But it's just it's kind of hard. Just
you
one
have
championship
to win
is kind of hard.
Championships, especially like a back-to-back years or three out of
I'm
four.
I'm so tired of these stupid rules. Like, they were
well,
a great
what?
Freaking team. They're a Hall of Fame team.
They are a should-have-been dynasty because of how good they were, but they always peed down their pants in the playoffs, so they're not a
and
dynasty.
Ran into the damn Yankees with Joe Torre.
But you could say that you guys started the Yankees dynasty, so kudos to that. You guys helped them out with their dynasty.
See, that is a dynasty. The New York Yankees of the late 90s.
Screw them.
That is a dynasty. Get out of here with your Atlanta Braves 90s dynasty talk. It's not a dynasty. Don't give me that bull crap.
Chris says on our text line, 737-1025, breaking up Kobe and Shaq is missed extending a dynasty. How many more could they have won?
I mean, to me, they're still a dynasty, but they –
they won three.
I think adding Karl Malone and Gary Payton was probably one of the worst decisions they could have ever made.
That wasn't good.
And I cannot wait to that Last Dance comes out, which I'll probably hopefully be working on one day. That is my goal, to work on that. Because
that's your life goal, Marquise?
That is my life goal, is to work on a 10-part docuseries on that that three-peat team, the relationship between Shaq and Kobe, even the relationship between Kobe and Karl Malone, that a lot hasn't been... There's a lot of stories behind that. But, yeah, I think if they would have kept the core together with Shaq and Kobe, I think they would have won, like, two more, at least.
Marquise, on Friday we talked about 30 for 30s that we want to see made, and one that none of us brought up, but Shaq and Kobe would be a good one.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's – and it follows the 30 for 30, like, model for – because it's like they had their positive energies and they won championships, then they had their downfalls, then Shaq made diss records and Kobe would do interviews and they would talk bad about each other, and then that Christmas game where they met up for the first time at All-Star games, and then they became friends towards the end and be like damn near family. So I think that's a perfect 30 for 30. I think it needs 10 parts though, because there's a lot to, you know, dissect in that, especially once Karl Malone and Gary Payton got there.
See, I think that would be a Kobe 30 for 30 where the relationship with Shaq is
a
like
part of it.
A huge part of it.
I think you can do just one on Kobe in general. Like, I think how you're doing the Jordan docuseries, I think you can do for Kobe and for LeBron one day when LeBron has one.
I mean, you could do one on Shaq, too. I mean, they've got the Orlando Magic version
with
Shaq
Penny.
And Penny. But you could do one on Shaq as much as you could do one on Kobe.
No, absolutely. Because, I mean, Shaq won championships in L.A. and Miami. So, I mean, that, yeah, I think you could totally do that. I'd love to see that. But anyway,
the Braves aren't a dynasty.
Yes, they are. And I've just put it on Twitter. We're going to let the people speak and see what they have to say.
They will agree with me.
They better not. I think they won't. When we come back, we'll shift gears. We'll talk NFL draft. It is coming up Thursday. We will discuss that next. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Are you working from home during the COVID-19 pandemic? Stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. Enable our Alexa skill or Google Home and ask to play 102.5 The Game. Or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back into the Rundown. We're here every day from 9 until 10, leading into Darren Donick and Chase. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson hanging out with you. So the draft coming up this weekend, gentlemen, and it actually kicks off on Thursday. So going to be different. It's going to be a cluster, as they say, because they're going to do everything virtual on Zoom. They've done some mocks to try and work all the kinks out, but you know that it's not going to be perfect. But the thing that is going to be on my mind as we enter the first round, with the Titans picking 29th overall, will John Robinson actually make a selection, or is he going to be wheeling dealing John and move out of that position? Now, I put on, about an hour ago, I put it on our Twitter page at 1025 The Game, a poll that says, will the Titans pick at 29, trade up, or trade back? 12% say trade up. I don't think anybody truly believes he's going to make a move to move up in the draft, but it's very close between picking at 29 and trading back. 47% of you say they will pick at 29. 41% say they will trade back. What do you think, Ryan?
I think we will see the Titans be picking their first pick of the 2020 NFL draft on Friday night.
On Friday night. So you say he's going to trade back.
Yeah, I think John Robinson's going to trade back into the early second round and try to accumulate more picks, especially with all the depth losses that they have experienced in free agency. I would say you trade back maybe into the late 30s or early 40s, and you accumulate some other third or fourth round picks, maybe a 2021 second round pick. You stockpile the cupboard, and in a deep draft, you go for depth and not trade up or stay at 29.
Yeah, I think with the positions of need for the Titans, they have probably identified four or five players that if they're there at 29, they'll look at it. They'll obviously say, okay, you know what? Maybe we just need to go ahead and take this guy. But like you just said, it's a deep draft. I mean, there's a lot of talent in this draft, especially at the positions that they need. So they could accumulate more picks and fill those needs. They don't need a starter. They need more of a depth guy. Now, corner, you can make the argument that, all right, if Logan Ryan is not back, then they're going to need somebody that's going to play a lot. But I still think you can get that, you know, in the second round, because 29 is basically like the beginning of the first round anyway. So I think they could trade back. I don't know how far they would trade back, but I think they could do that and still fill those needs. I don't see any type of trade like we saw, you know, when he first got here, of acquiring a player. I know there are some rumors about Leonard Fournette out there, with Jacksonville trying to move him. The Titans, in my mind, aren't going to be players for any type of personnel that are out there. But,
well, that's the most obvious thing you've said today.
Yeah, thank you. But and I didn't mean him specifically. I just meant in general. So I think he's going to be acquiring draft picks. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think that would be the wise move between the two. You know, we've seen John Robinson trade up for Rashawn Evans, and then I believe he traded up again to get Harold Landry, and those are the only two players that really panned out of that draft class. You know, Dan Cruikshank was in that draft class as well, but he's just a special team player. I would expect John Robinson to try to get depth over, or I should say quantity over quality.
Yeah. I'm just curious of what the order is going to be, because I think they do draft a running back, obviously. I think that's definitely a given.
Yeah, I think there's value with running back in the third, fourth, fifth round, where you don't have to spend a pick, where you could get a really nice corner for a number of years, or a really nice pass rusher for a number of years. And then maybe you roll the dice on a running back in the third or fourth round. That's where Keyshawn Vaughn of Vanderbilt or A.J. Dillon of Boston College come into play in the middle rounds. Maybe you trade back, and with one of those picks that that you get in a trade, you draft a running back.
Yeah, I kind of think that they're either with their first couple of picks will be pass rush, cornerback in some order. You know, I don't know which one comes first. It'll be best player available. But I think they knock those two out. And then in the middle portion, They'll probably pick up an offensive lineman, a running back.
Defensive lineman.
I do believe they draft a receiver. I think that happens. So, I mean, that's, you know, right there. You're 5-6 picks in, and I think you're addressing all your needs, because I do believe in those middle rounds, the third, fourth, fifth, you're going to get some quality talent that's just going to fall back. There's going to be that guy, you know, and it could be a Keyshawn Vaughn. It could be, you know, and tight end is another position that they could address, but I don't know how high I have that on the to-do list. But I think they're going to be able to grab some talented guys that can help this team early on, you know, in the third, fourth, and fifth round.
Yeah, and they don't have a fourth-round pick. That's the other thing in that conversation. So they have a first, a second, a third, and a fifth, no sixth, and two sevenths. So would not be surprised at all if John Robinson even traded down multiple times to try to get maybe 5 or 6 picks in the first 5 rounds and not just 4.
I have seen a couple of different mocks related to the Titans. And these are two players that Teron Davenport, who's going to join us at 1 o'clock today, has been very high on. The first coming up in the second round, sorry about that, wide receiver K.J. Hamler from Penn State. He is they need a burner. You know, that's somebody or a position that the Titans really need is that speedy wide receiver. K.J. Hamler fits that mold. And then also Lucas Niang, offensive tackle from TCU, taking him in the third round, the Tennessee in their mock draft that they have. If they got those two guys in the second and third round, even though, you know, they haven't, with those two picks they're addressing, you know, receiver and offensive line, I still like those. I think those help make this team better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a burner, maybe like a better version of Taywan Taylor.
Yeah.
You know, Taywan Taylor.
Somebody that could actually catch the ball.
Right. I mean, Taywan Taylor was an okay receiver, but he never flashed the potential consistently. I mean, you would see it in short spurts, but if you find someone who is similar to Taywan Taylor but can do the things that he did at least on a consistent basis, then I think you're finding yourself a wide receiver that can definitely add something to that offense.
So this is the Titans mock that Eric Bacharach put out earlier today. So I'm going to go through this and tell me what you think. I mentioned the middle rounds there, but the first round pick, 29th overall cornerback, AJ Terrell from Clemson. I don't hate it. If they stay at 29.
Yeah, I don't hate it either. That's someone that Teron Davenport speaks very highly of. So I wouldn't mind that at all.
Then K.J. Hamler, 61st overall. Third round, Lucas Niang, 93rd overall. You mentioned they don't have a fourth-round pick, so get into the fifth round. I don't hate this. Running back LaMichael Perine from Florida in the fifth round. Seventh round, defensive tackle Khalil Davis from Nebraska. Seventh round, they have 3 seventh-round picks. Quarterback Cole McDonald from Hawaii. And then 243rd overall in the seventh round, kicker Rodrigo Blankenship from Georgia.
Hey-o.
Hey, if he ends up here, I wouldn't hate that. Have a little competition, kicking competition. I just don't know if I love spending a draft pick on a kicker.
it's indifferent to me, as long as you're not spending a second-round pick on a kicker like the Buccaneers did with
How'd that work out?
What was his name? Robert Aguayo or whatever?
Yeah, Aguayo.
Aguayo, whatever.
Yeah, I don't think he's in the league anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that really worked out well.
But I don't know. I mean, look, seventh-round picks are such, you know, rolls of the dice. Who they pick and what they pick in the seventh round is insignificant to me, to be completely honest. You know, your seventh-round picks might turn into something that's useful. They also might get cut before they're out of their first training camp. So,
Cortland Finnegan, Blaine Bishop.
Sure, but there are a lot more names that did not pan out when you look at seventh-round picks. So if someone like that pans out, then great. But when analyzing a draft, you know, in the hours and days after, I think the primary focus is what did that team do in the first 3-4 rounds.
Sure.
Because after that, then you're throwing a lot of darts in terms of if you're going to find a useful player or not.
Sure. Well, very true. Now, you are, when we come back, I'm looking forward to this. You have advice for Joe Burrow, who's probably going to be playing in Cincinnati, because
better advice than what Peyton Manning gave him.
Yeah, Peyton Manning gave him some advice. So when we come back, we will hear your advice. But we have you covered for the draft. The Game Nashville is your NFL draft home for the much-anticipated event starting Thursday, April 23rd. Tune in to ESPN 102.5 The Game and 94.9 for all of our coverage presented by Wyatt Johnson Ford, your Nashville Ford dealership. Ryan's advice when we come back, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into the rundown. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Oh, H.
Sorry, Ryan.
No.
Had to play this for you because you want to give advice, Chase McKay, Brian Porth, you want to give advice to Joe Burrow before he heads to Cincinnati, because for those of you listening that don't know, Ryan is born and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes, but before I give some hard-hitting Cincinnati advice to Joe Burrow, this was all inspired by Peyton Manning. One of the best quarterbacks of all time. You may have heard of him in this state, giving advice to Joe Burrow. And Peyton Manning was on SportsCenter this weekend and shed light on the advice that he gave Joe Burrow.
Look, when I told him, I said, Joe, when you're the first pick in the NFL draft, you are going to a team that has really earned the first pick in the NFL draft. There are going to be some holes there, and there's a reason the Colts were picking number one that year. There's a reason the Bengals are picking number one this year, the Giants when they had Eli. So other people have to step up. You have to give them some help. But for him, I tried to tell him it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Look, I lost more games my rookie year than I had my entire high school and college career combined. I threw 26 interceptions. That's still an NFL record. If Joe wants to break that, Hannah, I'd be okay with that. We'd still be friends. And but I tried to learn a lot that year. I played every game. Jim Mora never took me out. I learned some things in the fourth quarter of those blowouts about what it took to be an NFL quarterback. And the next year, we went from 3-13 to 13-3. That wouldn't have happened had I not hung in there and kind of learn the ropes as a rookie, even though we took some bumps and bruises.
Peyton Manning on his advice to Joe Burrow. Now, I'm curious of when we're going to have the clip of Ryan Leaf giving his advice of being the second overall pick to Chase Young.
Yeah.
That's what I want to know.
Or to Justin Herbert or any other quarterback.
Come on, man. Let Ryan Leaf live his best life out here, man. He's a great guy.
All right, so that was some great advice from Peyton Manning, right? I mean, if I was Joe Burrow, I would so listen to Peyton Manning and the advice that he has for an incoming NFL quarterback, right?
Okay, and by the way, there is another Cincinnatian listening right now that is very curious to hear your advice.
I'm sure he is very curious to hear my advice. So, without further ado, this hard-hitting Cincinnati advice for Joe Burrow. Let's start with number one.
Number one.
The number one piece of advice that I have for Joe Burrow as he's preparing to be selected by the Cincinnati Bengals is that Mike Brown is a terrible owner. He doesn't know what he's doing. He never has, and he never will. But that doesn't mean that they cannot win there. So do not act like Eli Manning and cry about going to San Diego and force a trade, because the city of Cincinnati desperately needs you, because they don't have anything else to hang their hat on when it comes to sports.
Just throwing the owner under the bus.
That's number one.
I can't disagree, though.
Let's move on to number two.
Number two.
The number two piece of advice for Joe Burrow. Keep this in mind. When people talk about flying pigs in Cincinnati, they're not talking about your all-pro defensive tackle, Geno Atkins, who is fantastic. But the flying pig marathon is actually a thing every spring in Cincinnati because of the history of Cincinnati and the meatpacking industry back in the 1800s. So that is a piece of advice number two. Let's go to number three.
Number three.
My number three piece of advice for Joe Burrow before he's selected by the Cincinnati Bengals here in a few days. You go to Skyline Chili before you go to Gold Star Chili. You know what? You don't even go to Gold Star Chili. Gold Star Chili is straight hot garbage. It doesn't even hold Skyline's jock. If Skyline Chili is Target, then Gold Star Chili is Kmart. And if you go to Skyline
Kmart's
Chili,
gone.
I rest my case. And when you go to Skyline Chili, if you want to set the record for cheese conies consumed in one night, you'll have to overcome my unofficial record of 13. But to do so, you'll have to pace yourself and drink.
How are you living?
Say what?
How are you living?
That is a question that I ask myself every day. So if you are to overcome my unofficial record of 13 cheese conies consumed in one night, not in one sitting, I must say that, you must pace yourself and drink lots of water, not a different liquid that could make it tougher to pack in 13 conies. So that is piece of advice number three. Let's move on to number four.
Number four.
My number four piece of advice for Joe Burrow before he's selected by the Cincinnati Bengals. The University of Cincinnati is the real university in town. Don't let anyone convince you to root for the school that starts with an X, but you say it with a Z. Don't let anyone convince you of that. Also, UC is the university you should have transferred to over LSU, but I digress. That is piece of advice number four for me.
Number five.
My last piece of advice to Joe Burrow is the Cincinnati Reds will likely have you throw out the first pitch at a game in the future. We don't know whether it's going to be this summer, but in the future, you will be out there on the mound throwing out a first pitch. But if you want to see the Cincinnati Reds win, you'll have to visit the fantastic Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame, because you sure as heck won't see them win on the field at Great American Ballpark.
Your team's going to be better this year, though.
But in the conversation that we had earlier this hour about dynasties, that's not going to be a thing at Great American Ballpark. But it is a thing when you go to the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame just outside the ballpark. So those are my five pieces of advice for Joe Burrow, which mean a whole lot more than anything that Peyton Manning can tell him.
Well, number one, I think he's already said that he doesn't like Skyline, so that's a problem. He is from Ohio, so I mean, he knows chili industry.
You know what? Then he better not like Gold Star. Because if he likes Gold Star over Skyline, his future as an NFL quarterback is severely in doubt.
I would agree with that. Why is this even a thing? I don't. This is one thing I've never understood about your state.
Well, why it's an Ohio State thing.
I know. Because they go O-H-I-O.
Yeah, with all that enthusiasm, too.
Well, that's how I feel about Ohio State.
Okay.
That's going to do it for another edition of The Rundown. I'm losing my dynasty argument on Twitter.
Yeah, you
are. At Chase on Game, at Porth Game, at 102.5 The Game. I asked, are the Braves teams of the 90s considered a dynasty? And most people are bringing up the one championship. So I'm going to go cry for a few minutes, and then I'll come back for Darren Donick and Chase. That is next, ESPN 102.5 The Game.